The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Hello, and welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. Today, I want to dive deep into a topic that underpins everything we discuss, from freedom, finance, and family. The real post-war consensus. I want to tie together several of the recent topics I've discussed to describe the only way forward as I see it. And when I say this, I'm referencing the elements in our daily lives for which we have the responsibility to manage and steward as children of God. I understand that God is sovereign and will perform His will in His time. But that's not an excuse to blindly float through life as a passive bystander. We are commanded to patiently wait, serve, and war as a Christian soldier. That is, not of this world, but we have to stay here until we go. So my question is, what are you doing? Your actions reflect your true foundational beliefs. That's why Scripture states, faith without works is dead. You hear the influencers talk about post-war consensus all the time. They're pointing back to World War II. They talk about the centralized economy, the massive government spending like that of FDR, and the social engineering that took place. We've covered a lot of that, from the Federal Reserve and the income tax in 1913 to the displacement of gender roles. But I contend we're focused on the wrong war. This is clearly evident in the Christian nationalist movement today, with the talking points of Nick Fuentes and Joe Webbin. They push for a theocratic state and a Christian king, just like the Pharisees of the New Testament. They need a Caesar to help fix their problems. We are also watching the actions of our current conservative government to spend and tax us into oblivion, while simultaneously creating new layers of conservative welfare in the form of new tax-deferred accounts brought to us by the big, beautiful bill and tariff kickbacks to us serfs, so we play their game. These new taxes, spending, and tariffs are generating enormous hyperinflation that we are all experiencing in our daily lives as we just attempt to feed, house, and protect our families. The true consensus, the consensus that laid the tracks for the technocratic, centralized, and deconstructed America, postmodern style, that we live in today, was the one that followed the war of Northern aggression, what the normies call the Civil War. This narrative we've been handed, this idea of a righteous war fought for a more perfect union, is the quintessential example of the fact that the victors write the history. Today, we're pulling the thread on that historical lie. We are going to look at the historical record and expose how the foundational deconstruction of the U.S. Constitution happened under the guise of creating a more perfect union. We are going to use the works and writings of Thomas DiLorenzo, among others, to do it. Like I've said before in the past, I was raised in government school. And like many of you, I learned about the great, wonderful president and leader, Abraham Lincoln. But when I started studying the real history, when I started thinking for myself, I learned about Abraham Lincoln, the fascist. Now, if you want a resource that is direct and irrefutable, I strongly encourage you to read the works of Thomas DiLorenzo. I've already mentioned The Real Lincoln and Lincoln Unmasked. Here, DiLorenzo clearly exposes the true nature of what happened, pulling his evidence directly from historical quotes. The claim that Lincoln was a fascist is not hyperbole. It is based on his actions that systematically demolished the bedrock of American liberty. You can call it a war to save the Union, but you cannot call it a constitutional war. Consider this. Lincoln's presidency saw an unparalleled dismantling of civil liberties. He suspended the writ of habeas corpus, fundamental right which prevents unlawful detention, was thrown out the window. If you think law is just because it's a law, ask yourself if defying the very core of due process is just. DiLorenzo writes, and I quote, "The Constitution explicitly delegates to Congress, not the president, the power to suspend habeas corpus. Lincoln's unilateral suspension in 1861 and his subsequent defiance of Chief Justice Taney established the precedent that in a national emergency, the executive could become a dictator. He established military trials for civilians, even in areas where civil courts were operating. Citizens were hauled before military tribunals. He deployed troops to shut down newspapers that criticized his war policy and imprisoned political dissenters." The foundations were destroyed. If we are to understand the collapse of American society today, we must know what the righteous do when the foundations are destroyed. Psalms 11:3 says, "If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do?" The answer is simple. Rebuild them. We cannot rebuild what we don't understand. That's the purpose of this podcast. The Civil War was ultimately a war of economic centralization. It was a war to determine who would control the revenue of the country and the national economic engine. Fuse was lit with tariffs. High tariffs, culminating in the Morris tariff, were designed to protect northern industrial interests, making manufactured goods expensive for the agricultural South. The South saw this not just as an economic burden, but as subjugation. This is how the modern state functions. Control the supply lines. Control the economy. When you understand this, you will see why they don't want to repair our food supply system. You'll understand why Brazil's tariffs on beef have been lifted. It's designed to destroy the American beef supply while bolstering the import supply while using the talking points of tariffs good. It's amazing to watch. DiLorenzo, arguing against the simplistic view that the war was only about slavery, notes, the succession documents clearly cited the federal government's policy of economic protectionism, high tariffs, as a primary grievance. Lincoln's Treasury Secretary, Salmon P. Chase, admitted the inability to collect the duties in southern ports would bankrupt the government, illustrating the tariffs' centrality to the conflict. But more insidious was the long-term precedent of federal control over your money. First, the income tax precedent. To fund the war, the income tax was first instituted in 1862. It was a temporary measure, a war tax, but it set the precedent for the latter progressive, unapportioned, socialist, communist income tax of 1913. This gave the central government direct, unconstitutional access to your family's productive capital. Number two, the central bank precedent. Lincoln also signed the National Banking Acts of 1863 and 1864. This destroyed local, state chartered banks and created the foundation for a federal banking system. This established the template for what became the private banking cartel we know today as the Federal Reserve, which was established in 1913 along with the progressive income tax. The funding source, the progressive income tax, and the banking cartel are inseparable. They are two hammers used to destroy the Western world and the family unit. These moves were not just military. They were financial centralization. The goal was to consolidate wealth, not by creating it, but by controlling it and redistributing it through the machine. This machine is broadened today to include public-private partnerships and has successfully deep captured the securities market as a leveraging mechanism to procure the rest of your capital and redistribute it to the one percenters. These one percenters partner with the centralized power under the guise of capitalism, which steals your capital while simultaneously demonizing capitalism to reach the ultimate goal, which is complete communism. Whether it's fascist or socialist, communism is achieved. This will be achieved by the conservatives disguised as populism. We see this pattern over and over again, this rhyming of history repeating itself constantly. Every time there's a crisis, the solution is always more power for the central authority. The system always gives you a dialectic, two opposing political sides, the conservative right and the radical left. We see this clearly in the Bible, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. They were the religio-political system in Christ's day, and both sides were absolutely wrong. This system creates a narrative, a grand spectacle of good guys and bad guys. But as DiLorenzo states, the political establishment has a shared goal. The two major political parties function as the right and left wings of the same bird of prey. They differ on social issues, but they march lockstep toward greater centralization of power, larger government spending, and perpetuation of a fiat currency system. This is the great game. While the populace is obsessed with who's winning the political foosball game, the central planners are executing the plan. You know why I compare it to foosball? Because if you've ever played foosball, you know, your little guys there, they're like stuck on this rod and they can't move frontwards and backwards. You know, you can only kind of jockey them side to side. And this is the political system that we live in. In all these conflicts, the Civil War, World War One, and World War Two, the only consistent variable is the citizens are the collateral. You are the battery to power the machine. You are fleeced of your hard-earned money over arbitrary rules and regulations. This is why the current trend of fascist nationalism and the search for a political messiah are so dangerous. They promise hope and greatness, but it's just hopium propaganda. You cannot make a land great again when the foundations were destroyed in 1865. So what's the action plan? What do we do once we realize the problem? That the foundation of centralization was cemented over 160 years ago. The most important truth is this: nobody is coming to save you. You cannot wait for the right guy or the right tax structure or the right political scheme. If you don't know the problem, the solution doesn't matter. The solution lies in decentralization and personal responsibility. Number one, reclaim work and family. We must reject the narrative that work is obsolete. Work is a gift, a necessity for mankind to flourish. We must reclaim the family economy. Your home is the original decentralized system. As we know, the home is the economy. Number two, financial sedition. You must control your cash flow. We have to think long range, long. This is the motivation behind the infinite banking concept and private family banking. This is how you completely wean yourself off external financial institutions that enslave you with your own money. Number three, food sedition. Just like the motivation that led me to private banking, the same motivation led me to permaculture. It's an individual, personal solution. You must be part of your food process to pay attention and find solutions, because you can't wait until the problem fully manifests. I was just watching a video this week of a farmer in the Midwest that previously was selling his products to Big Ag through the monolithic distribution networks. And he was explaining how farmers were paid. He raised corn and peanuts. And he was saying how the 70s prices, the farmers were getting about twice per ton what they're currently getting now. So his solution was to sell direct to the consumer. So he did not sell one kernel of corn or one peanut through the larger monolithic distribution network. He sold direct. And not only did he sell direct, he sold all of his corn and all of his peanuts. And he was highly profitable. That's why we can't ignore the solutions. And the solutions are decentralization. The solutions are know your farmer. You can't wait for Walmart to not have any more beef on its shelf to start looking for a farmer. You have to do it now. And if you do it now, you redirect your dollars so that you're not funding the machine. We must build institutions not just for efficiency, but for meaning, responsibility, and legacy. We must guard against the technocratic deep capture. Proverbs 29:18 reminds us, where there is no vision, the people perish. But he that keepeth the law, happy is he. The vision is not waiting for a political messiah. The vision is rebuilding the decentralized, biblical, productive household. The most radical counterculture act you can do today is rebuilding the home. I need your help, guys. If you could leave me a review on your favorite podcatcher, if you could share this information with people that you think it would help, that would be a big help. We're super shadow banned. We are super throttled. It's like we virtually don't exist. So any way you can help and share this is greatly appreciated, as well as go on over to thetexasboys.com. If you're looking for a food forest in a box that's live, they're available now. You can check out our coffee line and our honey. We love and appreciate all of our customers and all the support. Leave your comments down below. A great app is the Fountain app for podcasting. We can communicate on there and you can comment. It's a great way to interact. Check out the Fountain app. We love and appreciate y'all. We'll see you on the next one.